Now Allah says in the Holy Quran that the people who do Amr al-Ma'ruf and Nahi al-Munkar, the people who exhort the right and forbid the wrong, they are the ones who shall be successful. Why is it that they will be successful? First of all, the criteria for exhorting the right and forbidding the wrong is the criteria of the Quran. The criteria of the Quran. It is not the criteria of sociologists, it's not the criteria of psychologists, it's not the criteria of political analysts. Is the criteria of the Quran. And since Islam is the religion of our fitra, it means that what we are saying or what we are encouraging people to do is something that would resonate within their very beings, their very souls itself. Amount of bad people in the world, people who like evil because it is evil, are very few. The majority of people in this world are ignorant people. The majority of people are ignorant people. However, the majority of people having a fitra are attracted to things that are beautiful to the fitra. And because we call people to be in conformity with their fitra. When I say fitra, we mean the spiritual matrix upon which we are created. Not our physical nature. Not our physical nature. Our physical nature can be distortions from our fitra, based upon our environment, based upon our education, based upon our indoctrination. We tend to go greater or lesser degrees in deviation of our fitra. But the fitra is there. The fitra is there, and people tend to be attracted to that particular beauty in our souls. And so when we encourage people to do the right and discourage them from doing the wrong, in the majority of cases, people will heed you. And it doesn't simply mean that you have to just tell them and they would listen. It might mean some time. It would require some kind of strategy. It would require a softness and indulgence with people. It requires you to be indulgent towards them and to be kind towards them. And it is only when people resist and insist upon doing the wrong that you escalate in your forbiddance of the wrong. And this, even this type of approach is an approach that is in conformity with the fitra and is an approach that would lead to a good outcome. So because Islam is the deen al-fitra, and we are trying to bring people in line with their fitra, this becomes attracted to the people. And Islam will grow. And we have seen this in our own contemporary history. We have seen this in our own contemporary history. Sometimes the beauty of your conduct is something that would affect people positively, those who have goodness in their heart. So Islam is something attractive to people. When many of these non-Muslim sisters see Muslim sisters, they are attracted to how they look and how they deport themselves and how they conduct themselves. And if they get a glimpse into our personal lives, if they get a glimpse, if you invite them to your homes and they see an ideal relationship from the point of view of their experiences in their society, they will come to the deen quite easily. Some of them think that, for example, women, you know, naively think that women wear hijab because men force them to wear hijab. You know, when they come home, they realize that, you know, here's another sister, there's no men around, no hijab, no problem. This is the type of relationship we have to establish with our environment in order to bring them to Islam. We have to show them the true face of Islam. And in showing them this true face of Islam, it would be attractive to them. Because everything that we do has a philosophy, has a reason. When we know the hikmat, the wisdom behind those things we do, and we communicate it to people, people would respect where we're coming from. Because in this society where we live in, people do things because of fashion, because everybody else is doing it. People think and reason because everybody else is thinking and reasoning in a particular way. I remember when I used to be in those universities, I joined the Black Club, and when we go around introducing ourselves, I introduced myself, I'm a Muslim, and I think that the African-American struggle is a very important struggle because we as Muslims are called upon to stand up against injustice regardless of who it is. And that everything I do or say from now on will be based upon Islam. And that's it. I never mention Islam again. Never mention it again. Why? Because people have a certain negative attitude towards the word religion. But anytime they hear you speak, anytime they heard me speak, they would think, oh, this makes sense. Does Islam say this? Well, I agree with that. This is Amr Ma'ruf wa Nahy al-Munkar. It's something that can be very subtle. It doesn't have to be something in your face. It doesn't have to be something that is harsh. It doesn't have to be something that is exclusivist. It doesn't have to be something that is rejectionist. It has to be something based on love. Based on love. Loving your fellow human being and wanting for him or her what you want for yourself. Salawat. So in this system that we have here, this modern Western system, they are a combination of these two dimensions, these two presuppositions of society. On one level, you have ignorance, and on the other level, the higher up you go, where you arrive at the people who own and control and want to own more, you have a direct propaganda machine creating a negative culture that aimed to reduce people to be mere consumers of what they produce. And these types of people are at war with religion in general and Islam in particular. With religion in general, because religion is absolutist. Religion is totalitarian, not in a negative sense, but total. Religion wants to and aims to influence every aspect of your life. And there's no difference between Islam and Christianity or Hinduism or any other religion where that is concerned. Religion wants to control or influence every aspect of our lives. And true religion is something that would liberate us from consumerism. True religion will liberate us from being manipulated by others. And the powers that be do not want us to be truly religious. Because when you talk about consumerism, when you think of the word itself, consumerism, it comes from the word consume. And consumption is something eminently physical. Consumption is based upon your passions. Consumption is based upon your ego. It's based upon your stomach. It's based upon your sexual desires. This is consumption. Without this consumerist attitude and culture, the economic oppression of people will cease. So it is in the nature and the fundamental aim of Western materialist society to encourage us to be consumers, to encourage us to think purely about satisfying our physical needs and desires. After that, they can sell you any amount of soda pop they can, because you want to go after that taste. And it makes you then a slave, because now all you're doing is working to consume. You're working for them, they give you money, which you give them right back because of the things they encourage you to eat and drink and partake in. And that eating and drinking is something that goes against justice. It goes against your fitrah reality. Why does it do so? Because it creates more and more needs in you for the dunya. And the more you're tied to the dunya, the further removed you are from the akhirah. And the further removed you are from the akhirah is the more prone you are to committing injustice. This is one of the reasons why crime in Western society is much higher than elsewhere. Because people are removed from their spiritual reality. They see each other as objects, not as brothers and sisters in faith, or brothers and sisters who are servants of Allah. They see each other as objects to be preyed upon, to be plundered, to be used, and to be abused.